Hi, everybody. It's Mary Lou Tyler. This week, I have Anthony Anarino. Anthony is the best-selling author of a book called The Only Sales Guide You'll Ever Need. It's a red book. You need to go pick this book up. It's really, I'm not sure if the only, but it's one of the only books that you'll ever need in sales. Anthony, welcome to our phone call today. Thank you so much for joining.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So we talk a lot in our world here with my folks about sales process, you know, predictable revenue written in 2011 and then predictable prospecting written in 2016, really focus on the sales process, sales enablement from a process standpoint and metrics. You know, but I'm seeing that as we put these frameworks in and these methods in, it's really starting to amplify and accentuate what I call sales skills and what you probably call mindset. So what I'd like to do today is discuss with you predictable revenue, but twisting towards or looking towards the actual mindset piece, because I believe that you're just exceptionally good in explaining that and getting people excited about the fact that it's not just process and technology, it's people as well. And people is mindset of the sales rep themselves and also the buyer.
Happy to talk about that. I think I would start with the work of Colonel John Boyd, who created the OODA loop. And if you're not familiar with that, there's a great book by Robert Coram called Boyd that explains Boyd's journey from being a fighter pilot to being someone who actually designed airplanes, fighter jets particularly. And what this OODA loop was is he recognized as he went to college and got advanced degrees in science, he recognized the second law of thermodynamics and entropy, and he started to realize that the reason that American planes did better than Russian planes is because everyone was trying to build a plane that could go longer, further, and faster. And mm-hmm. what he realized is none of those things are important when you're in a dogfight. What's important is how quickly you can adjust and turn so that you can flip over and get behind your enemy. And what Boyd continued to admonish the United States military about in joint sessions of Congress and in hearings was that it is people, ideas, and technology in that order. And they would get the order backwards. They would say, wait, it's technology, and then it's ideas and people. And he would continue to tell them, no, it's people first. And I think we do this in sales quite a bit. We start with the idea of we have this technology, so we can automate emails, and we can do things now with video and all these other things that we think we want to do. And we're automating things that don't lend themselves to automation. And what it turns out to be the differentiating and defining factor between people that succeed and people that don't succeed comes down to just a couple things. And the first thing is the willingness to do things that other people are unwilling to do. And successful people have a mindset to do things that other people are unwilling to do. And they have a certain set of disciplines and a mindset that says, this is how this works, and this is what is important, and that's why we do it this way and in this order. And mm-hmm. what happens for many, many salespeople is you can be really, really good on the telephone at prospecting, and you can be really, really good when you're in front of the client. But if you're not on the phone and you're not in front of the client, then none of those things matter. And the differentiator tends to be people who believe that they are disciplined about their prospecting and that they put pipeline above everything else. And so when you look at people who do really well, their pipeline looks different. They're disciplined about making calls. They're disciplined about nurturing their dream clients over time. They're disciplined about following up, and they don't tend to give up. They persist for long periods of time, long after many salespeople will have made a couple calls and sent a couple of emails and gone away. So the framework that I use, Mary Lou, is mindset, skill set, toolkit. And it's not toolkit and then skill set and then mindset. It starts with what does that person believe? So if you are not generating the revenue that you want to generate, that the first problem starts with you and the disciplines and the actions that you take. And it's what you really believe about prospecting. And I just shot a video this morning for my YouTube channel about our mistaken expectations of email and voicemail. Mm-hmm. And we send an email and we expect this person, some of these people anyway, will reply to my email and schedule appointments to meet with me.
Right.
and that doesn't happen, and the salesperson is disappointed. Or we leave a voicemail and we say, please call me back at this number. And then we say, no one ever calls me back. No one is ever going to call you back. That's an expectation that's out of line with reality. And we're pursuing their business. They're not pursuing buying from us. If mm-hmm. there was a line of people in front of your company waiting to buy from you, you would be redundant and we wouldn't need you. What we need you to do is understand that the way the relationship works is we're in pursuit of them. And so you need the mindset of a competitor. You need to be resourceful. You need to take initiative. You need to be disciplined. And you need a prospecting process that gets executed with such great consistency that it actually produces predictable revenue.
Mm-hmm. Most definitely. I think one of the things I heard you say was the fact that, you know, you need to have consistency in what I call habit. And I do a lot of talking about habit trumping inspiration, because a lot of times what I see from the inspiration side is that we're hopeful. It's hope prospecting as opposed to consistently prospecting. And the other thing I love that you said, which I'm a little bit of the, I guess, at fault for some of this with predictable revenue, is that it was all about asking for the internal referral was the actual predictable revenue. But I'm seeing all these emails coming through now from folks that have embraced that process, that ask for 15 minutes of time without giving you any. It's almost like you have to look at the email and try to figure it out yourself. You know, so they give you this email and there's no sense of urgency. There's no reason why. And then at the end of it, they want you. They want your time. And it's over and over and over again, because technology allows us to just put those emails all into a string and send them out over a period of time.
Yeah. And you know what it is? I'll just give you an interesting story about how this goes wrong for people. I got an email from a salesperson at one of my companies, and the email said, we're doing business with companies that look like yours. Here's a name, here's a name, here's another name that we're working with. Click on this link to see what kind of work we're doing for them. And so there's links built into the email, because mm-hmm. clicking on it is an indication that I'm interested. At least that's their perception of it. It's not, but that's their perception. So we'll leave that as a B. I did not reply to the email. 3 days later, I get another email from the same salesperson that says, I wanted to make sure you didn't miss this email. And that email was pasted below it. And it said, we really don't want you to miss this link. We're doing important work in this area. And I deleted that email too, because it really wasn't about me and it wasn't for me. And the third email came in and it said, this link is still up, but I don't know how long it's going to be there. We want to make sure you didn't miss it. And then some more text with some more proof providers, which is why us, not why change. And so the proof providers were not aligned with where I was in a buying process by any stretch of the imagination. And finally, I sent the person a note and said, this strategy sucks, and you should read Jeb Blunt's Fanatical Prospecting, because what you're doing is not working. Mm-hmm. And I didn't get anything back for about 3 or 4 days. And then I got an email from the salesperson saying, I'm sorry, I didn't send you any of those emails. They were all sent by our CMO who does marketing automation. Mm-hmm. And so this is not even a person who's trying to reach me. It's a piece of technology that's trying to reach me. Mm-hmm. And it's not tailored to me, even though they have the industry right. It's not tailored to me, and it doesn't create any value for me. And so we're trying to automate relationship building, and relationships don't lend themselves to automation. When you're checking the box and saying, yes, I communicated with this person, because I sent them an email, that's not the same as saying I'm nurturing and I'm developing a relationship and I'm creating value and I'm sharing insights and I'm helping understand where they are in the buying process and I'm delivering a message of why they should change and what their better future might look like. None of those things were happening. And I think that's the mistake that we make, thinking that we can turn something that's going to take more effort and energy into something that technology by itself will solve. And I'm a technology guy, so I do think technology has a role to play. And I even have a number of presentations I give about intimacy at scale. But it's the intimacy that matters. You need to know me, and you need to know what's important to me, and you need to speak to me about why change and what you know that might make a difference for me, or basically what you're doing is not going to have the desired impact at all, because it's not aligned to who I am and what I want.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about that a bit, because
I'm
know
filibustering
that
you, aren't I? I'm on a monologue.
That's fine. This is all about you today, Anthony. I mean, I think what's beautiful about what you're saying to the audience is that we can't rely on technology to do our work for us, number one. And number two, it's still about the conversation. It's still about the relationship. It's still about learning about our prospects. Now, the rebuttal part from the audience would probably be something like, you know what, that's great, Mary Lou and Anthony, but we have thousands of records. We are given 250 records a week to work. And this is a new business development, for example. How the heck can we have conversations that are personal in nature with that many people and then remember where they were in the sequence, because our boss wants to send out 8 touches or so. So, you know, it's there's a catch-22 here as to how we can do this and do it in a way that's impactful yet is personal.
That would be 12,000 leads a year per rep. And there's not a single way that you can manage 12,000 leads per salesperson with any kind of consistency and with hope of developing relationships with 12,000 people. Mm-hmm. Intimacy doesn't scale that far. If you look at the research of Robin Dunbar, the most relationships a person can handle on average ends up being about 150. And the best people can maybe get to 225. I have some thoughts that leveraging technology, you can probably get a little bit more than that, because silicon is a better substrate than the human brain when it comes to remembering things. There's no doubt about that. And you can use the technology to remember things, but you're never going to be able to manage 250. And automating it is not selling. Mm-hmm. Automating that is marketing. And marketing is not selling. Those are two different functions in my view of the world. Marketing says, I'm going to try to message something of value to get interest and awareness. Mm-hmm. Selling is different. That's a communication where we're having a conversation about what's important to you. And if you're selling transactionally, like Amazon does, you can send me something saying, Anthony, you tend to buy books by Jeb Blunt. Jeb Blunt has a new book coming out. Okay, well, we can automate that part of a relationship because the price of Jeb's book is going to be something like $27. But when I'm trying to send something that creates massive value, that is strategic, that comes with risk, that's going to require multiple conversations, automation is marketing. It is not selling. And so there's not a way to put 8 emails together that say, I'm going to send 8 emails and convert these people, when you're selling something that's not transactional. It's not the right approach. So what do you say to a rep who does that? Make 250 dials, 200 and I don't know, what do you want to call it? 180 to 200 go to voicemail. Okay, so those are calls where you got to leave a message of value and that you can follow up at some time on the future. You're going to have some conversations with people. Some of those are actually going to be leads that you can convert. There's not a way to manage 250 leads per week and have a meaningful conversation with that many people.
Correct.
So it's not a problem that can be solved by applying additional effort. You're going to have to just make decisions about what's important and what's not. And I would say that anybody who's giving the reps 250 should think about what they're doing.
So that's a very good point, because another question that comes in a lot for me is, this is our directive. You know, how do I enlighten my manager that it can't possibly be done in a way that's going to generate a predictable outcome?
Yeah, I don't know that you can have that conversation. I think that a lot of people have to learn this by looking at the results and failing over and over again. I think that they have to have the experience of saying, these people are making 250 calls and they're not turning them into what we want them to turn into. Okay, why not? Because they're not reaching enough people, number one. And number two, they're not targeted. I mean, if you have 250 a week, 1,000, you have no targeting at all. And that's absolutely a way to fail and not produce the results that you're capable of. But I don't know that a rep can go to his boss and say that, or her boss and say that. Mm-hmm. I think what they have to do is say, what's the process? You know, there's two kinds of people, Mary Lou. There are people who believe that everything is their fault and people who believe nothing is their fault. So all you can do is decide, what am I going to do to succeed? And I would tell you that would be, find a way to look at that list of 250 and say, these look like greater probability prospects than these. If you can make that slice, if you can say, these 50 look better, and I'm going to double down on that so that I can produce the results that I want to produce for me and for my success and for my family and for my future. and try to be as smart about it as you personally can. And I will tell you, as a sales leader myself, there are plenty of salespeople who are succeeding in spite of their leaders in just about every company on earth.
Yes, yes. And it's interesting that with the new buzzword around account-based selling, it's really taking from it. Now I'm looking at it from a process record point of view, and it's really taking those top 20, 40 accounts that you think are going to hit that high probability of closing, high revenue potential, that you have a good conversation started with. And those accounts, you apply hyper-personalization, or that what they're calling a hyper-personalization of emails, of conversation, so that you're really getting to know that person at a deep level. And I think that's the reason why I'm seeing a lot more of, rather than lead follow-up, account follow-up, which is kind of funny because that's how predictable revenue was written originally. It was a 3-hour, 15-minute sales process, which means it was more of an enterprise-based sale. There were more than one stakeholder that we had to get a hold of and have a conversation with. And somehow that got lost in the translation as 250 a week, 1,000 records. They don't all have to be different accounts. But it turned into more of a machine and less about quality.
Yeah, and I don't think that is the fault of the authors. I think it's the people who believe that you can automate intimacy. And intimacy is what you're talking about. And I don't really know what account-based anything means, but I know there's account-based everything. There's like account-based coffee, account-based muffins. I mean, everything's been account-based now, and I don't know why. It's like it's the new social selling. And here's the thing. It is targeting. And anybody who's been selling for any number of years knows that you're going to start with a list of defined targets that you're going to develop intimacy with. And that list is going to be finite. It's not going to be 1,000. Mm-hmm. For me, I like the number 60 personally, because I can make 3 phone calls a day, 5 days a week, and cover 60 accounts in the course of a month, which I would call dream clients. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to go super deep on those, and I'm going to get to know the people inside those companies. I'm going to create value for them. I'm going to nurture those relationships over time. I'm going to try to find my way in so that I can expand my relationships within that company. And I'm going to create the intimacy where I know them and they know me as a value creator. And then when they have an issue, they're going to say, you know what? We need to talk to Anthony. He knows us. He's been talking to us. He's been giving us these ideas for months or years. And now it's very easy to make a decision to bring me in. That's not something that lends itself to automation. I do think that there's a place for content creation and content delivery and intimacy and creating that and sustaining it over time. But I don't think it can be done with 8 emails that were written months and months ago. And when somebody downloads your white paper, they get into a funnel where they just get hammered with emails. I don't think that creates intimacy. Mm-hmm. I think that there has to be a human being that they're communicating with. And that human being needs to know something about them to personalize this, or else it's marketing.
Right, right. A lot of times we're also getting records that are cold in nature. So we do target, we work through our ideal account profiles. We work through an ideal prospect persona that's not a marketing persona, but more of a sales-driven persona. What I mean by that is typically the call to action for us, top of funnel, is to get that first meeting, to get that first conversation going, or a follow-up conversation. So we're really looking at where people are positionally in the pipeline as we start having these conversations and trying to get a better sense of defining who they are and what their roles are or what their challenges are, because they may be different or they may be languaged differently. When you talked about mindset before and really getting your own internal mindset, what is your advice for people who do talk to multiple personas, like an IT guy versus a marketing guy? Do they need to change themselves in order to be able to have these conversations, or are they always themselves, but just maybe languaging a little bit different depending on who they're talking to? What would you say there?
I think it's the obligation of the person who's making a call to understand how to create value for the person on the other end of that call. Mm-hmm. And so if I'm a tech guy and I've got to call a marketing person, I need to have enough what I would call situational knowledge to be able to have a conversation with them about what I suspect is important to them and what I suspect their challenges might be and what I suspect their goals might be. Mm-hmm. So that's my obligation to figure that out. And I'll tell you what I see, Mary Lou, and maybe this is what you see too. There's an extraordinarily heavy reliance on SMEs in a lot of sales processes now. And because there's so much of a reliance, a lot of salespeople have given up the idea that they have to have deep subject matter expertise because they're always going to have a SME with them. And the problem with that is you only need two things to be a trusted advisor. You need trust and you need advice. And if you don't have the advice because you're not conversational and you don't have the business acumen and you don't understand that person's role or their business well enough, and the only thing that you have is that you know a guy or you know a woman who can actually help them, then you can never be the trusted advisor. You can just be the person that knows somebody who can help them. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that salespeople aren't orchestrators, because for sure we are. And we are definitely leading teams on our side and on our client side. But the fact of the matter is you do need to have enough knowledge to be conversational with the people that you're going to talk to in a day-to-day basis in sales. And if it's a marketing person, you're going to have to do some work to understand that. But it's not that difficult to do. If you ask people to help educate you, even clients, if you say, help me understand what someone in your role needs from a person in my role, they're going to be happy to share with you what kind of things they want. And you can get that situational knowledge and that awareness of that really quickly.
Definitely. And I think also another area that I find very helpful is if you're in a larger company and you can look at some of the surveys that were taken on behalf of the client role, like a marketing person being interviewed via survey, and their responses to any type of loyalty or customer service or quality of service question, and also challenges. You can get a lot of information by studying these responses and getting an understanding of how people talk. And I think that's one of the biggest things that I know my troops get a little bit wary or nervous about, is how to use their language. And I keep saying it's mostly about your tone, but there are some pieces of language that would be helpful so that they get a feel for, that person understands me. He's talking my talk. He understands where I'm coming from. But like you said, it's really not a huge amount of effort to get this information, but you do need to be consistent with the roles. And that's another area that we have a little bit of a challenge with this technology, is that we're sometimes fed multiple records, multiple roles. So we can't really get within a rhythm in our calls if we're not in charge of ordering our records in a way that we can make phone calls to certain people of certain roles during our block time. We have to switch ourselves around a lot, which is really hard to do.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's much easier to get momentum. Mm-hmm. And if this is a mindset thing too. I see so many salespeople who pick up the phone, they make one dial, and it takes them 10 minutes to research and adjust to make the next call. And it's just an ineffective use of time. And what you'll see high performers do is to do their research, and then when they sit down and dial, they're dialing. And they get into a rhythm and they get this momentum. And I do think that if you have to keep switching gears, it's difficult. And if you're having one conversation over and over again with a certain stakeholder in a certain role, you get super competent at that. And you sort of get this momentum going where the conversations get easier and easier because you keep having them all day. And when you don't do that and you keep switching the conversation, I don't think you ever really get that rhythm.
Mm-hmm. I remember seeing one of the women in, as I was walking through the business development area, she had sticky notes on her terminal of three different colors. And I was looking at that thinking, wow, what the heck is that? And I went to talk to her and she says, well, this is my call log. This is who I'm talking to. And they're three different people. And she said she never knew who she would need to talk to next. So she just kept notes in order for each of the three different roles on her computer, basically, so that she had the conversation pieces. And I thought, wow, that is very inefficient.
But that's what it probably took her to be straight when she picked up the phone and called somebody.
That's exactly right. So for her, it was a nice fix of saying, look, we need to reorder your view so that you lump everybody and clump them all together. And then the other thing that I suggested, and I hope people still do this, is sometimes it's easier to plan your calls the night before, meaning, you know, do the research you need to do on the people you're going to call in your calling queue at the end of the day or the time when there's a block of time where there's really not great phone activity, and organize that, then go home, rest, and your subconscious will work through some of those conversations so that when you do come in and do your blocks, then you're going to be pretty fresh. And like Anthony said, you just start at the top and work your way down. That's the best way to do it.
I think that's right. You separate the research and the calling, and you do get into a rhythm, and it gets far, far easier, and you're far more effective that way.
Yeah. So we're running out of time here, Anthony. I could talk to you all day. I was hoping if there are a couple things, because a lot of my folks are, some of them are new, some of them are doing all roles, but if they were to like, okay, we're going to take one thing away from this call that we can put into action, what would you suggest? And using that word predictable again, thinking about mindset, what would you suggest that these folks do?
I think there's one thing, and it's the first chapter of my book. It's discipline. It is to determine what the disciplines are that create predictable revenue. And so if that's what you want, it means that you're going to do X amount of prospecting every day. Yeah. You're going to do this much nurturing every day. You're going to do this kind of follow-up every day. And it's those disciplines. You call them habits. I call them disciplines because it really is, in my view, it's a discipline. And like anything that you do that leads to success, it's the disciplined, consistent action over time that produces the results. So it's not the one day of prospecting that builds predictable revenue, and it's not the desperate trying to catch up with 250 prospects. It's specifically just the daily, day after day, doing the same thing over and over again that gets you there. Mm-hmm. And that's what I would say. First and foremost, put those processes in place and then execute against them with great discipline. And that's the secret.
So I'll be putting all this in the show notes, the links to your book. Where else can we find you?
The best place to find me is thesalesblog.com. And then the other place is youtube.com/Iannarino. And I do a daily blog post and a daily video blog at those locations.
Wonderful. And are you going to be speaking anywhere? And this is airing probably in the next month or so. Are there any places that people can meet you in person that you'll be at?
The only live event that we have on the calendar right now is the Outbound Conference on April 13th. But if you keep your eye at outboundconference.com, there'll be three or four more shows this year.
Oh, wonderful.
And those will be public events that people can attend.
Okay. And you guys will learn all about the entire pipeline at those events, right? It's not just top
of
funnel, it's everything, which is great.
That's,
well, thank you so much for your time, Anthony. I really appreciate it. It was great speaking with you. And I love the book. And I know that you've shared with me there may be another one on the horizon, but we'll get you again coming on the podcast when that one's launched.
Sounds good. Thanks so much for having me, Mary Lou.
Thank you.